Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 9, Malleus Maleficarum, which is about witches. It was written by Ben Edlund and directed by Robert Singer. So, two guys we've talked about some on the show. I hope everybody knows Ben Edlund is one of my favorites, and Bob Singer, he's directed more episodes of Supernatural than anybody else, so there's plenty of his work to have been great and terrible. This one is one of the better ones. I love this episode. That's possibly just Edlund, but hey, it's our first episode. It took us two and a half seasons to get an episode about witches and witchcraft, and that brings back our demon of the season, Ruby. And I think I should probably start with my standard disclaimer about how this is the Supernatural universe, not our universe. When they say witchcraft, they don't mean what we think of in the modern world as witches or people who practice witchcraft or Wicca or any of the pagan religious practices that may fall under the banner of witchcraft. They're talking about something very specific in their universe. It won't be expanded upon for years, but we'll learn about different types of witches and how they get their power. But this one is specifically talking about witches who get their power from demons. So they're not trying to make commentary about our world here. It's plot for Supernatural. Sometimes they do it sensitively, sometimes less so. Again, I don't have an opinion because that is not my religious practice or something that I know tons about or feel like I can make an authoritative statement on one way or the other. So I'm just going to look at it through the context of what the show is telling us it's supposed to be in the Supernatural universe. And I hope that doesn't make anybody uncomfortable, but I am not here to solve the world's problems. I'm just here to talk about what the show means. So I'm sorry about that, but that's how I address these sorts of potentially sensitive topics. And if I don't know enough to know whether it's going to be sensitive or insensitive, I like to issue this disclaimer at the beginning of episodes. I'm going to be talking about witchcraft in the context of Supernatural, an alternate universe where demons are working to manipulate humans into selling their souls to hell through their own ignorance or greed or stupidity or whatever motive they can find to insert themselves into people's lives and manipulate them into corrupting their human souls so that they will be destined for hell. That's the goal of demons, and that's what they use. Witches who, whether willingly or knowingly or through various dubious consent, trap them into deals that they may not have realized they were making at the time, but probably should have known that something was too good to be true. So even in universe, it's a metaphor. So, moving on. I think this is also an episode where the season had to make choices knowing that the writer's strike was imminent. We have script pages, casting sides for Elizabeth, for Renee, and for Tammy, who turns out to be the person possessed by the demon, or she is the demon. There is a lot of overlap between their pages, but all told, there's maybe 21 unique pages amongst all of them. So there is kind of a lot. But it is a very early, it's the writer's second draft, and it's dated, usually you'll see like a month, day, year date. These are just dated 9XX and then the year. They don't have a date. So I'm going to assume that it's sometime in mid-September that this draft is from. This episode will be the first one to air after the winter break at the very end of January. So by the time it aired, they absolutely knew they were in the writer's strike. They were 2 weeks out from the end of it, but it started at the beginning of November. So by the time this script went into production, it was at least probably early October, and things were very much becoming, you know, reaching critical mass on whether or not there would be a writer's strike. So I think that they were trying to backstep away from the plot to have Sam explore his dark side with Ruby in this season. They knew that there was a chance that they could not finish that plot if they started it. And they didn't want to start it unless they knew they could finish it. So there's a lot of backing away from that. Like, Sam and Ruby interact a lot in this episode, but Ruby interacts a lot with Dean as well. And it's almost like they were trying to straddle these two paths. Like, if the writers don't go on strike, we're still going to have, you know, after what they had already written at this point, we're still going to have 10 episodes. That's enough to cram this whole thing. But let's put a little balance in there of Dean and Ruby and let him explore his fate and let him dig a little deeper into this. Because I don't know that that was originally intended for Dean to really have to look at himself that hard, as he will over the next few episodes. But it happened because there was this uncertainty and they needed to be able to believably leave themselves a back door just in case. This could have been the end of the series for all they knew at this point. Just pointing that out again, since it's the overarching shadow over season 3, not even from within the plot itself, but it does affect the plot and how they had to handle it because of this uncertainty. I think that also is the reason for Dean's conversation with Ruby at the very end of the episode. It feels like a point where they had to force Dean to confront that saving him from hell was not necessarily a realistic goal. And having Ruby's duplicity laid out to Dean here, even though it's not concrete, she's telling Sam one thing and she's telling Dean another. She's telling Sam, oh, I'll be able to save your brother from hell. And she's telling Dean to his face, I can't save you from hell, which is honest. She can't. She doesn't want to. That's not her goal. She wants Dean in hell, as we'll find out next season, you know? But it becomes the inciting incident for Dean to begin to really look at what will happen to him once he goes to hell. Every demon that Ruby's ever met was once a human soul that was corrupted by its time in hell. It was one thing for Dean to think he was selflessly sacrificing him to an eternity of misery in hell. It's another thing entirely for him to think, holy crap, I might become one of these things that I hunt, that I kill, that is an incarnation of pure evil in his eyes. And even a demon like Ruby, who's been helpful to them for mysterious reasons that she gives some excuse for in this episode that we'll talk about later. But what would that make Dean if he was to become twisted into that? That gives him something to truly fear. What will happen to who he believes himself to be, his identity? It forces him to think more deeply about who he is and what matters to him. That's a horrifying concept, to lose one's identity and become something you're not. And being twisted into a demon feels like that for him. It also forces him to confront the impulse that made him feel like selling his soul to hell was the only option at the point he chose it, that his life truly meant so little to him compared to Sam's. Why? And he'll be forced to confront that really strongly in the next episode. But since we're talking still about the episode that we're talking about today, everything else can wait. But I just wanted to point that out because this really becomes a catalyst for him to confront that more directly. And honestly, that's something he's going to be battling until the end of the series. That holding desperately on to his identity, because that's all he has, that's all he feels is true. And that's why Chuck's statements to them at the end of season 14 hurt him so badly, specifically. You've always just been my guys, you're my characters in my show. And I love to watch you do what you do. And to Dean, nothing was real anymore, including himself. And how do you even begin to come to terms with the fear that you maybe aren't who you believe yourself to be? That's just something that he'd always felt was unshakable, that he'd been looking at in himself, you know, even when he became a demon, even when he had the mark of Cain, even when he was possessed by Michael. Everything else that's happened to him, his time in hell didn't destroy his self-identity. Nothing else did the way that what Chuck said to him in season 15 or the end of season 14 did. That hopelessness, that there's nothing left to base his self-identity on. Maybe it's all just made up. Maybe it's not me at all. Like, what is even real at all? So this is the beginning of that struggle for Dean. Even though he chose to sell his soul of his own free will, what made him believe that that was his only option in that moment? The lifetime of conditioning that made him believe that Sam's life was the only thing that mattered, and that protecting Sam was the only thing that made him valuable, and to have failed in that. He begins to face that that was a horrible thing to believe, to make a child believe about themselves. And the resentment towards John begins to spill out in next week's episode, but we'll save all that delicious resentment for next week. So I said they're sort of shifting gears here just a little bit, like Sam's potential to save Dean by the end of the season, even through his own self-destruction, is still on the table, because we get a good parallel of it in this episode. When Dean is cursed and Sam basically jumps in the car and races off to try and attack the witch who's casting the spells, Ruby warned them against going after this demon. And Sam's just like, nope, I'm going anyway, and just barges on ahead alone. And Ruby swoops in and saves Dean's life with her little potion, and they get back just in time to help Sam with the demon, but he almost gets himself killed by that demon. So he's to the point where he's willing to do dangerous and possibly very poor consequence actions in order to try and save Dean if he can. And he's reminded yet again by that demon that he failed to step up into his supposed destiny of leading the demons, and someone else has taken over that spot and wants him dead now. He doesn't care. He doesn't want that job. But that's still used as a taunt against him. So that darkness is still on the table for him. And obviously we know he'll tilt into it next season, but it'll take him all season long to do it. So yeah, even though this one on the surface looks like Monster of the Week, there is big myth arc plot points happening here. Maybe not advancement of the myth arc plot, but we're getting more information about it, which is always good. We'll also see the brothers keeping secrets. Sam will not be telling Dean anything he doesn't have to about working with Ruby. Dean will not be telling Sam anything that Ruby tells him, at least not during this episode. They're going to be Winchesters about it and just bottle it up and get all morose about it for a while before they actually have to confront one another with what they know. Oh, and yeah, just a reminder that Dean still doesn't know the fact that what turned Sam when he was 6 months old and what gave him all those demon powers in the first place was Azazel dropping demon blood in his mouth. Dean still doesn't know that. Sam has known since the season two finale, second to the last episode of season two, when Azazel told him, and he's of course kept that from Dean. So all of this influence from demons and even giving Dean the tiniest of reasons to believe Ruby or believe anything she tells him is predicated on him not knowing that fact about Sam. So just want to remind everybody about that. Dean won't even learn about that till season four, so don't worry about it. But just a reminder that that is yet another secret that Sam is keeping from him. I suppose we should now begin the then segment. We get the usual intro to John, the reminder that they are picking up where he left off, killing some evil sons of bitches and raising a little hell. But interesting change between the last episode and this one. All season long, they'd been using the word carry on his legacy. And in this one, Dean didn't say that. He said pick up where he left off. So they've disconnected their actions here from a family legacy for some reason, even though we know what their family legacy is, because destiny is what made all of this happen, you know? Others' belief in a specific destiny. We get a reminder that Ruby exists, that she's got a special knife that can kill demons that not even Bobby knew about, and that she knows how to fix the cult and fixed it for them. So she's the helpful demon. We get a flashback to that conversation in the car where Dean's mad that Sam talked to Ruby and didn't just banish her once he found out she was a demon. And Dean concludes the conversation angrily by telling Sam that Ruby knows what his weakness is. It's Dean. And she'll use that to manipulate you. Even though she says that she can help save Dean from hell, Dean doesn't buy it. And then he has a quiet conversation with Bobby about, you think something's wrong with my brother? Bobby's like, nah, demons lie. Sam confronts Ruby about the fact that she has not yet saved Dean from hell, and she's just like everything in its own time. And she talks about Sam's sweet disposition or something, and it just shows a shot of Sam killing Gordon Walker with the razor wire. Like, oh yeah, that's a real sweet disposition there. And it ends with her threateningly telling him that she'll be there, the little fallen angel on his shoulder. So that brings us to now. Our cold open starts with a wealthy-seeming couple coming home from some sort of party that the woman complains about was not thrilling. The husband says something to the effect of, oh, but I did see this beautiful woman there. And the wife's like, oh, you should have gone home with her. And he's like, yeah, I did. And they start making out, and he unzips her dress. And she's like, give me a minute. I'll be right out. And she goes into the bathroom. He goes downstairs to get some wine. And then we cut to someone lighting a match and chanting in Latin. As this woman begins her nighttime routine, takes off her jewelry, we go back and forth between the two, seeing this weird ritual, this plate of bones, candles, odd implements on a table as someone is chanting. And we see the woman slowly becoming more disturbed as weird things begin happening to her. She has to open a new toothbrush because her old one, I guess she either threw out or it disappeared, but she takes a toothbrush out of the box and begins brushing her teeth as we see the person doing the ritual unfold a cloth, and inside is a toothbrush. And as she chants, the woman who's brushing her teeth, her mouth starts to bleed, and then her teeth begin to fall out. As the chanting person cuts her hand and drips more blood onto the toothbrush, it gets worse, and the woman who's brushing her teeth realizes something is terribly wrong. She calls out for her husband, Paul, and he comes running to help her, and she's like, it's my teeth. And just as he's about to rush to her in the bathroom, the door slams in his face and locks itself. We cut back and forth between Paul banging on the door, desperately trying to get in, the woman over the sink as she coughs up more blood and basically all of her teeth, and the person chanting who finally stabs the toothbrush with a knife. And just as Paul is about to kick the bathroom door down, it slowly unlocks itself and swings open to reveal his wife dead on the floor. And then we cut from a shot of her blood and teeth in the sink to the title card. Sam and Dean are at Paul's house. Sam's investigating inside the bathroom while Dean's interviewing Paul. And he's explaining that nobody could tell him what exactly happened to his wife. They don't have any answers for him. And Dean's writing in his little notepad like, yeah, that's why they called us in. They're there as CDC. You think somebody tried to poison her? And just as he says that, Sam finds something strange underneath the bathroom sink. What we will come to know throughout the rest of the series as a hex bag. And yes, this is the first use of a hex bag in Supernatural. Again, took till mid-season 3. Something that we think of as always has been in the show and is one of those standard things in the show. But nope, it was introduced here, and it was just a witchy curse thing at the time. Dean asks, you know, if there's anyone who'd want to hurt Janet. Paul is incredulous for a moment, but then he stops and he looks off to the side like, oh shit, maybe that person would. But when Dean pushes him to give him an answer, he's like, no, everybody loved Janet. So he's clearly hiding something. There's something more going on here, but he's not ready to confess to what that is yet. But Sam comes out of the bathroom, so Dean knows he's ready to go. Dean gets the feeling that Paul was kind of evasive with them. Sam wouldn't know because he was under the sink finding the hex bag, which has bird bones and other magical objects in it. He says even the cloth was probably cut from something that Janet Dutton owned. So it was targeted at her. And Dean's like, oh, gross. You know, from the outset, his thoughts on witches are, oh, this is disgusting. It's going to be something horrible, gross. He does not like witches. We find out that Dean doesn't like witches because they're, quote, always spewing their bodily fluids everywhere, and it's downright unsanitary. So we know he doesn't like germy, gross things, and that's more proof. Sam reminds him that witches can be anybody. They're just humans who use these black magic abilities for evil. So they're going to have to actually figure out who in Janet's life had it out for her bad enough to kill her with black magic. We then go to a woman kneeling in her garden, you know, tending her plants. There's a man in the background doing something to a hedge. And her neighbor pulls up and has a conversation where the woman who had just gotten out of the car with a grocery bag was in kind of a hurry and dismissive towards the gardener woman, who is concerned because she missed book club last night, almost like she's prying into this woman's life. But she's harried and distracted and walks off, but the gardener woman just sits there and stares after her creepily. So we're already wondering which of these two women is our witch, but we see the woman who brings her grocery bag in has a bandage wrapped around her hand, the hand that we saw cut in the cold open with the spell, bleeding on the toothbrush. And we have to think, oh, was she the one who killed Janet? Why would she want to kill Janet? She seems distracted. And the other woman was framed as being sort of suspicious in the previous scene. So what's going on? The woman with the bandaged hand goes to her oven, opens the door, and pulls out what would have been a nicely roasted chicken like 5 days ago, but it's just crawling with bugs and worms and maggots, and you can hear flies buzzing. So it's been days, clearly, that it's been rotting to this state. And it's just, Dean's right. Witches are just gross. Just unsanitary. Later that night, we see Paul Dutton parked in his car, eating a fast food burger. And he's alone in the rain, listening to the radio, playing Every Rose Has Its Thorn. We cut back to someone setting up a weird ritual, and we know who it is. It's the woman with the cut hand and the rotten chicken. She picks up the same knife she used in the ritual she used to kill Janet with. And poor Paul's just sitting there chewing his burger, feeling melancholy. His wife is dead, you know. He goes to check the time and looks at his wrist, but his watch is gone. And we see it immediately being placed down on top of the rotten chicken as the same chant from the cold open begins. She stabs the chicken and says, "This meal was cooked for you, Paul Arthur Dutton, and now you're going to eat it." And the radio stops playing Poison and instead switches to Screamin' Jay Hawkins singing "I Put a Spell on You," which, hilarious. It's not poison that it's going to kill him. It's a spell, right? Yeah. Ha ha. Funny. He's confused by the radio having changed, and he looks down at the burger he's eating, and it's just basically maggots in a bun. Lovely. He turns the radio off, but it turns itself back on as he comes face to face with the maggot-filled bun and begins choking, and he manages to get out of the car. He's on his hands and knees when Dean and Sam pull up, basically jumping curbs to get to him. Sam searches the car, finds the hex bag, sets it on fire and burns it, saves the guy's life. The rotten chicken in front of the witch blows up in her face and she's freaked out, like, what the hell? The man's just like, what the hell is happening to me? And Dean looks at him directly and is like, someone murdered your wife and now they're trying to kill you. And he doesn't believe it. He's like, no. And Dean's like, look, if we hadn't been following you, you'd be dead right now. Just tell us who is out to get you. He still doesn't believe. They push him. He says there was a woman that, a mistake, who was now blackmailing him, but he put an end to it a week ago. They press him and press him for the name, and finally, he must give it up. But we have to assume it's our little witch here who's now frantically paging through her witchy Bible looking for some explanation for what happened or some way to protect herself, some spell. But no, it's too late for her. A wind blows through her living room, blows the candles out, and slash marks appear on her wrists so that it looks like she's committed suicide here. And she knows what's happening to her almost. She doesn't say, "What the hell is going on?" She's just like, "No, no, no." And then she falls dead on her coffee table. Sam and Dean break into her house. Obviously, Paul gave her name up. And they find her dead. They were expecting to find a witch. They had their guns out, ready to kill somebody, just in case. But no. They find this failed spell to kill Paul Dutton on the floor and realize that she was the one who was casting it. Dean turns around and comes face to face with a dead rabbit. And he's like, "Whoa, why is it always the rabbits?" Yeah, why does the rabbit always get screwed in the deal, Dean? But Sam's confused as to why she would have killed herself, even if she thought she had successfully killed both Janet and Paul. And Dean's trying to blow it off like maybe spurned lover's hat trick. Sam is still dubious. But Sam does a little bit of looking around and finds another hex bag hidden underneath her coffee table. So somebody clearly hexed her the same way that she had done to Janet and Paul. Now we know how witches work. We know that she's not the only one. Dean actually bothers to call the police to report the body, and then the two of them don't even just immediately vacate the premises. They just stand around wondering if they might have a coven on their hands. And then we cut to the little book club meeting, which I believe we're supposed to immediately recognize is our coven. As one woman's husband is leaving, saying, "Yeah, I know, it's not really a book club, you just dish and gossip," Elizabeth, the creepy gardener, walks in, and he makes a joke about how nobody ever brings a book to this book club, and Elizabeth's confused. She's like, "You didn't tell him what we actually do?" And one of the women replies, "Oh, that's book club business. We don't talk about that outside of book club." While the other woman starts setting up candles and getting things ready for whatever their spell they're going to be casting together is. Elizabeth is distressed by their attitude that they're just going to keep doing the spells, even though they realize that Janet is now dead and the woman who killed Janet, who was part of their book club, is also dead. But the other two, Tammy and Renee, are both like, "Well, we know she was unstable." They're dismissive of their friend's death. But it's Renee, the blonde woman, who convinces Elizabeth that this awful, awful business with Amanda, who killed herself, and the fact that Amanda killed Janet Dutton as well, there's nothing they can do about that, but they can't stop doing what they're doing. There's so much benefit to it. So they go through with whatever spell they were carrying out, praying to the Book of Shadows, an old grimoire. We don't see what spell they were enacting this time, but we cut to the next day, and Elizabeth is again working in her garden, digging up some worms. So there's worms right under this soil. It sort of reminds me of the scene in What Is and What Should Never Be when we first see Mary's house in that dream gin universe. And the shot that was based off of from Blue Velvet, the montage that shows the beautiful, cheerful garden where nothing looks like it's wrong and everything's pretty on the surface, and it just goes right down beneath the soil and you see all the rot and the bad underneath the soil. I think that's what they were trying to get at here as well. While she's digging in the dirt, Sam and Dean come up, and Sam comments on what a green thumb she must have to grow all of these herbs out of season. And she looks up confused, and he said, "I should introduce ourselves." And he introduces them as detectives this time. They come right out and say they're following up on Amanda's death and talking to her neighbors. And Elizabeth is quite confused. She's like, "I thought, didn't she kill herself?" Dean's like, "Well, maybe." He goes on to ask if she knew about Amanda's practices. And she professes confusion about this as well. And Sam says, "Yeah, well, the house was littered with satanic ritual items." And this confuses Elizabeth even more. She's like, but she was an Episcopalian. Just as Dean says, "Well, then she was using the wrong Bible." Renee and Tammy come wandering up and they flank Elizabeth, and Renee is the one who tells Sam and Dean to shove off, that they know nothing about Amanda's death. It's Renee, though, that just gets up in their faces about it, like giving her name and giving them the good shove off. So right now, as things stand, it looks like she must be the leader. She must be the one in charge. She must be the one controlling this group. But things aren't always what they seem to be on the surface. The beginning of this scene reminded us, and we know from having seen the episode before, that yeah, that's exactly what the scene was trying to tell us. They like Elizabeth for being part of the coven because of the herbs that she was growing weren't your usual herbs. They were like belladonna and wolfsbane and witchy herbs. Sam is looking up articles about a run of good luck things that have happened for her lately. She's won a few too many raffles recently. Sam, is like, yeah, that is kind of suspicious. And Mrs. Renee Van Allen, as she introduced herself, also has had a run of good luck winning a bunch of craft fairs that she's entered things in lately. They debate whether they need to do anything at all if they killed the nutjob who had gone off the reservation, in their words, and used the black magic to kill somebody to hurt other people. But the coven took care of it. And they're like, do we need to actually do anything here? But somebody still killed Amanda, so that's still somebody they have to worry about. Sam is adamant that they still need to stop these people because they're using black magic. And about the only way you can stop people who use black magic is to kill them. Dean argues, well, they're human still. And Sam's like, well, they're murderers. And then as they're driving, the engine cuts out. The lights flicker in the car and it pulls to a stop. And Ruby is in the road. Ruby tells Sam, you've got to get out of town. There's no time. Just leave. And Dean gets out of the car and pulls the Colt and cocks it and points it at Ruby. And he's like, ah, so this is Ruby. I had never had the pleasure. And he's ready to shoot her. Sam's like, Dean, wait, she's got information she's trying to convey to us. Shut up. Don't kill her yet. Dean's like, yeah, no, we're not leaving. We're going to take care of these witches. And Ruby's like, it's not the witches I'm worried about. It's who they serve. And Sam puts it together instantly and gets it. Demons. The witches are getting their power from demons. And Ruby doesn't want them anywhere near this particular demon. Dean is still insistent that they just kill Ruby, go back and take care of the witches. He doesn't believe that Sam is actually listening to her. Dean and Ruby just start arguing, like, Dean wants her gone. He doesn't trust her at all. And she pulls out the fact that, oh, if you care about your brother so much, that's why you're leaving in a few months, right? And ouch, she hit Dean right where it hurts. And she's like, at least, let me try and help him since you won't be here to do it anymore. Someone's got to look out for Sammy, basically. And she's saying it's going to be me when you're gone. Meanwhile, Sam is just standing off to the side through this entire argument, looking more and more like a lost, sad puppy, like he doesn't know what to do. He believes what Ruby is saying. Dean doesn't. Dean doesn't care what Ruby has to say. But he knows that Ruby is a demon and evil, and yet he knows she's also been helpful and useful, and she might be the only one who knows a way to get Dean out of his deal and sent to hell. And Ruby's just playing both of them here. And oh my God, what a risk to take. She knows that gun can kill her, and yet she's still pushing at Dean. Like, she knows that Sam would step in and stop him. Or maybe she doesn't. Maybe she's just like, this is a risk I need to take in order to prove myself to Sam, whether Dean ends up believing me or not, So this was a very calculated risk on her part because, as we see in the very next moments, Dean gets so frustrated that he pulls the trigger. But Sam bats the gun away, so it fires up into the air, and Ruby has zapped away. But she's gotten her point across. Dean is still yelling at Sam by the time they get to their motel. Dean's like, they want us dead. We want them dead. You've got to stop listening to her. Sam's like, oh, I remember that demon in Ohio you didn't want to kill, Casey. And Dean's like, yeah, well, she wasn't stringing me along like a fish on a hook. And yeah, not that it was great to let some random demon go, but she literally had done nothing to Dean. I mean, she'd killed his friend, but in any normal circumstance, he would have been fine with killing her. And hey, great proof of concept that the gun works. And he was also concerned for Sam being not quite right in that episode. Still worried that he was not quite Sam after having been resurrected. But this is just reinforcing for Sam his willingness to trust Ruby, because now he has to defend her and the information he's gotten from her to Dean yet again. And in doing so, it makes him believe it even more. Sam argues, you know, what, are you going to kill her with the gun she fixed for us? And Dean is still like, yeah. And Sam's like, look, all she has to do if she wants us dead is stop saving us. That she's basically given them the tools to save themselves, or she's directly saved them like 4 times so far this season. So on the surface, it really looks like Sam's right. But underneath the surface, we know everything's rotten. It's all worm-eaten. And in this scene, the framing of just the style of the motel room, all the deep oranges, these entrapment colors. Sam standing over by the door, between the door and a window, like free to walk out. He can see out the window. Behind Dean in the framing for most of this argument is decorative bars in archways and the deep orange of the walls and the orange bedspread that looks like it's got a grid pattern on it that looks like prison bars. So Dean might be free now, but he's on his way into that prison, you know, into hell. Sam tells Dean that things just aren't that simple anymore. You don't just kill the bad thing. That they have to take what advantages they can, because they're not just hunting, they're at war. And Dean splashes some water on his face and turns around and he's just like, are you feeling okay? And Sam is frustrated. He's like, why are you always asking me that? Dean's been asking him that all season long. And Dean's like, well, because you're taking advice from demons and you're always ready to off people. You that used to eat you up inside, and now you're just casually suggesting we go kill some witches. When did this switch flip for you? And why aren't you acting like the Sam I used to know? And Dean expects it to be some influence of the demons on him, or some aspect of the deal Dean made resurrecting him. Sam's like, what, so you're mad that I'm starting to agree with you? And Dean's like, no, I'm not mad. I'm worried because you're not acting like yourself. Sam tells him, well, yeah, I had to change. I don't have a choice because you're going to be leaving and I'm going to be left here alone to fight this war by myself without you. So I had to change. Obviously, this is going to drive some guilt at Dean, like, oh, yeah, it's my fault he's going to be left alone because I made that deal for him. He could have been, you know, whatever. He would have been dead, but at least he wouldn't be part of this crappy war. And Sam tells him, yeah, I had to change because without you here, I had to become more like you. As if Sam believes he's not good enough to fight whatever war on his own, that he knows and acknowledges and he needs Dean to do it. So that's also sort of an indictment of Dean as a person, that, yeah, well, if I have to face this war alone, I have to be more like you. Well, yeesh. Imagine. That's another way Dean's failed Sam. As they're sitting there, Dean begins clutching his stomach and bending over in pain. Sam asks what's wrong, and Dean's like, I don't know. And he just keeps doubling over in pain, jokingly often referred to as the Dean has period cramps scene. Dean's like, it's like there's a bunch of knives inside me. It's the coven. And then Sam starts tearing the motel room apart, looking for another hex bag in the cupboards, flips the mattresses over. He literally just cuts into a mattress at random as if that's where the hex bag would be, just sitting inside the mattress ticking or something. But Dean starts spitting up blood and Sam starts to get desperate. So Dean's lying on the floor, coughing up blood. Sam pulls the Colt out of Dean's bag, runs out to the car, and just drives without thinking right back to the place where Ruby told him to stay the hell away from. Sam barges in on the coven, and they're all kneeling around their little altar, and he pulls the Colt on them, and he's like, look, stop the spell. And they're like, what on earth are you talking about? He's like, if you know who I am, then you know about this gun, addressing one of them who may or may not be the demon or in touch with the demon who is actively killing Dean. Back at the motel room, Dean's still coughing up blood. He didn't die as quickly as the previous two victims. He's just dragging out his inevitable death. Like, how long did it take Sam to drive all the way back to town, you know? So while Dean's cowering on the floor, Ruby kicks down the door and comes in. He's like, you want to kill me? Get in line, bitch. She picks him up and flings him onto the bed and pours some really terrible tasting stuff, by Dean's reaction, down his throat. Meanwhile, Sam is still got the coven at gunpoint, and he's like, you stop the spell. You've got 5 seconds or, you know, I'm going to kill all of you. He's not even listening to reason here. The women are like, what spell? We don't even know who you are. They're like, we're just getting Renee a lower rate on her mortgage. And that confuses Sam. He's like, what the hell? And it's almost as if Ruby used this other demon's presence to set up this little side scenario about Dean to earn his trust, to have a reason to save him, to come in and be able to be like, yep, I saved your life. Now I can make demands on you, or at least maybe you won't be so actively hostile towards me every time I show up. Sam, back at the coven, finally works out that Tammy must be the demon because she never claimed anything for herself. The others have had runs of good luck and, like, they were just getting a better rate for Renee's mortgage. But Tammy has not claimed anything for herself from all of this because she's already getting what she wants, these women's souls. She finally caves and flashes her black eyes, and Renee and Elizabeth are shocked by this, and Sam pulls the trigger, and she stops the bullet inches from her hand. Like, you can't shoot me with that. I'm more powerful. Tammy flings Sam across the room with her demon powers, and Renee is like, what are you doing? You're not in my house. So Tammy just flicks her hand, and Renee's head turns all the way around, her neck breaks, and she drops to the floor. Poor Elizabeth is left to just scream in horror, finally getting to put the pieces together. You killed Renee. Yes, Renee, and also Amanda. That's what happens when witches get voted off the island. And Elizabeth is trying to understand why this is not her friend Tammy. And Tammy's like, yep, but I am wearing her meat. So we know how demons possess bodies, and that's how they walk around in human form. And Tammy is just pointing out all those dark demonic forces you prayed to and swore servitude toward in exchange for all the nice things you got. Well, I'm the dark demonic force you prayed to. Elizabeth is just beginning to understand the gravity of what she's done. When Tammy's like, you sold yourself to me through all of that. It's sort of like the antagonistic version of, I mean, not that it's not antagonistic, when Ruby says very similar words to Sam at the end of season 4 about how, you know, the power was in you. You made all the choices. You chose to do this. Did you convince yourself that you were doing all of this for some greater good or just that it was harmless? Tammy only just had to bring that book to book club, and all of them were just all on board for getting what they could from it, even if they were, you know, Elizabeth especially here, had always been dubious that it might be wrong or maybe this is something they shouldn't do or shouldn't continue. She, at the beginning of the episode, she was the one who, after Janet Dutton died, she was appalled that they were still going to continue using it. Now she's got to face up that her instinct to abandon it had been right, you know, or to never touch it in the first place. But Elizabeth tries to say, no, we didn't know. And Tammy's like, oh, no, you knew every step of the way. You knew. You made the choice over and over again to keep going. You could have walked away. You did not. Now your soul is mine. It may not be the exact words or the exact process that Ruby tells Sam at the end of season 4, but it's the same. You just kept making the choice over and over again. I never pushed you into it. I just provided the outlet for you, and you just kept choosing the same over and over again. And Sam is standing here, pinned to the wall. I guess maybe not standing, maybe hovering against the wall where Tammy's got him pinned. Watching all of this unfold, watching a demon reveal her manipulation, and yet he feels above it. He feels like, no, that could never be me, you know? Or he wouldn't keep pushing it with Ruby. He wouldn't keep tempting fate with her. He believes he's more powerful, at least mentally. He doesn't trust her. He knows he doesn't trust her. And yet he's going to keep using her for information to the point where every single time she's brought the book to book club and Sam is going to keep reading it. And we're watching it play out in a much smaller scale between Tammy and Elizabeth right here. And literally Sam is watching this play out, and yet he still falls into that. After Tammy finishes explaining all of that to Elizabeth, she turns to Sam and is like, comments, questions? And Sam says nothing. He's pretty convinced that Dean is probably already dead by now, and because that's what Tammy said. And he's pinned to the wall. He can't defend himself. He can't do anything. And now here's this demon just grinning at him, this demon that Ruby had warned him about. So she may not be trustworthy, but Ruby's starting to seem more trustworthy. Tammy tells Sam that she and her friends had been looking for Sam. And Sam's like, oh, right, because you want me to lead your stupid demon army. And she's like, oh, no, you're not my messiah. There's another demon, and he wants you dead. So she slowly just starts pushing Sam through the wall. The plaster starts cracking around him. Poor Elizabeth's freaking out and has no idea what to do. And then Dean comes barging in. She easily gets him pinned against another wall and is ready to press them both to death when Ruby comes strolling in. Ruby holds up her hands and is like, I just want to talk. And Tammy's impressed that Ruby made it out of hell. Ruby then says, take me back. That's why I led the Winchesters here. And of course, Sam and Dean are immediately like, ugh. Dean's like, ugh. Yes, I told you she was bad news. Ruby's flattering her, you know, like, I just want to serve you again. And Tammy's like, yeah, you were one of my best. And then you think, oh, God, Ruby's really actually going to just hand them over to her. But then she pulls out her knife and tries to stab Tammy with it. Tammy stops her just like she stopped the bullet. And's like, then again, you always were a lying whore, which, I mean, that's like her Ruby's whole deal, right? Like, she just lies, but not really. The knife goes clattering to the floor, and they start fighting. Tammy's forgotten that poor Elizabeth is still just standing over in the corner. Nobody's tried to stop her. She's just being quiet. Except, you know, you did teach her witchcraft, and she's gonna use that. Ruby gets seriously beaten and thrown to the ground, and Tammy grabs a fireplace poker to finish her off, I guess, dramatically. She clocks Ruby with it, and that gives enough of a distraction for Elizabeth to run over to a bowl of pins. She dumps the pins out and starts chanting a spell over them. Tammy's the one who tells Sam and Dean that Ruby used to be human, and when she was a witch who sold herself to this demon. And that's the first time they've ever heard of a human becoming a demon. Tammy starts chanting another spell, forcing Ruby out of her meat suit, forcing the smoke out. And that's when the pin spell that Elizabeth has been putting together goes into effect and stops Tammy from being able to finish the spell to expel Ruby. It's hard to chant a spell when you're coughing up pins. And it may have been the last thing Elizabeth ever did, but it was even enough to free Sam, Dean, and Ruby and distract Tammy long enough for Dean to pick up that knife. And we get what is possibly the most violent killing we ever get with Ruby's knife. Dean just keeps repeatedly stabbing her as if that was necessary, and it wouldn't have been much faster if he'd just stabbed her once and left the blade in. We know that's enough to kill demons. So, like, man, he must have just been super pissed. Either that or they hadn't worked out the mechanics of how they wanted this blade to work, or, but it's just always struck me as just unusually and unnecessarily violent. I mean, not that killing anything isn't violent, but you know what I mean. Excessive. Ruby tells Sam and Dean to go, that she'll clean up this mess, and they just leave. Dean had actually left the knife in Tammy, and we watch Ruby pull it back out. It's not really their knife yet, you know? Well, I still think of that knife as part of, like, Dean's accessory package, but no, that knife is still Ruby's here. Back at the Conquistador Motel, Sam is in splashing water on his face, and Dean is out walking along the sidewalk, and all the yellow lights at the motel start flickering and flashing, and every time I see this motel, I'm reminded of about 9 different episodes that have used this motel as a set, and none of them are what you'd think of as positive, and almost all of them have to do with something demonic or just evil. I mean, yes, it's supernatural. Every episode has something to do with something evil. But this motel in particularly, I mean, it's the same motel set where they are in The Monster at the end of this book. It plays the part of the Red Motel where Sam is supposed to have his tryst with Lilith. The parking lot outside is the exchange site at the end of Metafiction, supposedly trading Gadriel for Cass to Metatron. And Cass discovers that Dean has the mark of Cain on his arm. Bad things have happened at this motel. I believe this is also the Blackbird Motel from 1021. So, I mean, I'm not even talking about that episode because it makes me so friggin' furious. But we all know what happened there, or, right? Yeah, okay. I don't have to say that out loud. Good. So, yeah, this motel has a history of really bad things being associated with it. Obviously, it's played different motels, but it's the same physical set where they filmed it. And Dean's walking around outside, and the lights begin to flicker. And he stops in his tracks like, oh, crap, not more demons. But it's just Ruby again. Dean actually has some questions for her, and he's willing to listen to her answers because he didn't know that demons used to be human before. And now he's going to hell, and he's like, so you died, went to hell, and now you became a demon? And she's like, yep, that's what happened. Which prompts him to ask more questions because he's about to die and go to hell, and he wants to know what the hell's going to happen to him. He thought he'd just suffer punishment. No. He asks her how long ago. She's like, when the plague was big, so what, 1300s? So Dean is beginning to put the pieces together. Every demon was human once, and Ruby's like, everyone I've ever met. And that has Dean concerned. He's like, okay, well, if I'm not just going to go to hell to suffer, if I'm going to eventually become a demon because of that, that's not something he's okay with. But Ruby's using that as her excuse as to why she cares about humanity and stopping the demons from whatever plan they have, because she remembers what it's like to be human. She's like, most of the others, they don't remember what it was like to be human, and that's what hell does to you. It makes you forget. She literally says, that's what hell is. It's forgetting what you are. That's her definition of hell. I also think it's interesting that at the beginning of this, she told him, I don't believe in the devil. And she doesn't believe in the devil. She believes in Lucifer, an angel. Right? Let's remember that. She's like, the answer is yes, by the way. And Dean's like, what? She's like, yeah, the same thing will happen to you. It might take centuries, but hell will burn your humanity away. This isn't something he can be flippant about. This is something he has to face. She says every hellbound soul gets turned into something else. Well, later canon has interesting thoughts on that. There are still souls who just stand in line for centuries. Or ones that we've seen that had been dead for centuries. Like, we'll see ghosts come back and it's like, well, they were hell ghosts. Early season 15 here now. But they were not turned into demons. They're still just ghosts. Why didn't they begin to become demons? Like, does not every person who's killed become a demon? Does it just take a lot longer for some people than others? Do some people just stand in the eternal line for millennia before anything begins to happen to their souls? But that's a whole other philosophical debate for another episode, probably. But I'm just throwing it out there because we do know that, yes, all demons were once human souls that were twisted somehow through some process in hell. And it happens at a speed that you cannot predict, but it's supposed to happen. And once he's been there long enough, it'll happen to Dean. That was the main point of this whole conversation with him, getting that information to him. Ruby then just comes flat out and confirms one of Dean's arguments that he's been making to Sam since the beginning. He's like, there's no way to save me from having to go to hell, is there? And she's like, nope. And he asks, why did you tell Sam that you could? And she said, to get him to talk to me, which is exactly what Dean warned Sam was her motive in telling her that. She's lying to you. She's manipulating you. And she's basically come out and said, yes, I was lying to him because I needed him to talk to me. Ruby then goes on and's like, yeah, but I need a favor. I need your help with Sam. I need to get him ready. You know, you were able to kill that demon tonight. That was pretty tough. Sam's not quite there yet. And we need to get him ready for when you're gone. Because he's going to have to stand up for himself and defend himself without you. I'm the only one who can help him do that. Ruby starts to walk away. And Dean stops her. He's like, why are you trying to help us? Why are you on our side? And she's like, isn't it obvious? I'm not like them. She has her I'm not like other girls moment here. She's like, I wish I was, but I'm not. I remember what it's like, you know. And Dean's like, what? And she's like, being human. Which, nothing she just said has been a lie yet. Why are you helping us? Because I'm not like them. I wish I was, but I'm not. She's not like the other demons. We know that. But it's not because she wants to save humanity. It's because she's got this special mission to set them up. And I remember what it's like, you know, being human, is not part of the same thought. It's a separate statement. Not a lie. She probably does remember being human. She remembers her time with Tammy the demon when she was the witch. Doesn't mean she has soft feelings about any of it. She's playing her role. She's not like the other demons. She's got a very important part to play, and God damn it, she's going to do it flawlessly. I think one of my favorite things about going back and rewatching seasons 3 and 4 is going through and noticing how, even with all the context of everything Ruby does in canon, nothing she ever says is an out and out lie. It might be slightly manipulated bit of truth, or only true if you look at it from the side. But man, she is 100% correct. She never lied to them. Well, she told Sam that she might be able to save Dean from hell. And Dean's like, I can't be saved, right? And she's like, no. And he's like, well, why'd you tell Sam? That was the one lie she has ever told. That was her foot in the door. That was the one lie that she could tell amongst all the truth. She could defend every other true statement, but to Dean, she'd have that one lie almost as like proof of the truth of the rest of what she's said. I'll admit to the lie. I'm not going to lie to you. Now to your brother Sam, in order to gain his trust, because I care about saving him as much as you do, and you're going away to hell. I need him to trust me. I'm going to tell him this one lie so that he will have a reason to trust me. Well, Dean can understand that. There was honestly no better lie she could have picked than one to specifically manipulate Dean through his own feelings and how he thinks of Sam and needing to protect him. He's like, well, if Ruby just models her behavior on Dean's protective urge over Sam, eventually that's going to win him over at least a little bit. But right now, Dean just has some big, horrible things to think about his own future and what's going to happen to him once his deal is up in a matter of months here. And that's where the episode ends, with us looking down on a overhead shot of Dean standing all by himself with his car in this parking lot, looking rather adrift. And that will deliver us directly into the next episode, where the themes are coming to finally catch up with Dean and beat him about the head and face with his choices. In season 3, episode 10, Dream a Little Dream of Me, where Dean will actually have to look himself in the eye and admit that he may have done fucked up, but he'll acknowledge why. And that's always a step in the right direction. But I'm not going to start talking about it now because I won't stop talking about it. Next week's going to be probably a long episode. So much. So many. Anyway, until then, you can always find me on Tumblr and Twitter at either MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord. I'm Mittens hashtag 4865. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I'm always happy to talk to anybody about anything at any time. So I managed to make it through the whole episode without my laptop crashing, and yay! One try! So if it sucks, it's just because it sucked the first time through, because, you know, I'm not doing it over if I don't have to. I can't believe I actually got, like, all of that in. Wow. Pretty good. I'm getting faster at this. How does that happen? At least I'm getting faster when I'm not, like, accidentally deleting an hour of it at a time. Yeah, maybe I'm just getting less incompetent. I don't know. But it's been a year since my first episode, so, you know, gotta hope I've learned something in a year. Have a good one, everyone.